If you walk into a card show or go to a card shop like Cards HQ or go online to a site like eBay and start browsing sports cards, you are going to find literally millions of choices. How do you know which of those cards are going to go up in value? How do you know which cards are going to be more valuable a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now than they are today? That is a really difficult question, because with millions and millions of cards being made each year, the vast, vast majority will actually be worth less in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years than they are today. And for those of you right now saying, hey, it's easy, just don't buy the young modern players, buy vintage or buy the all-time greats, I'm here to tell you that's not always the solution either. Not every vintage card goes up in value either. And there's also plenty of people that prefer to buy the players playing today. So this is a complicated question. And today we're going to look at it from all angles. We're going to talk about investing in the young up-and-coming players, but we're also going to talk about investing in the all-time greats and in vintage cards and how to make safe investment plays that actually will go up long term. How to distinguish the cards that are going to be more valuable down the road. So to get into this episode, I'm going to bring Tyler Nethercott, you know him as Teapot, from our Sports Card Investor and Market Movers team, onto the show with me, and let's get ready to break this down. This episode is brought to you by Arena Club. Arena Club is an innovative platform featuring grading and authentication, vaulting, and digital pack openings. Be sure to check out the amazing items up for auction right now at Arena Club. From rare cards to top-tier collectibles, there's something for you at Arena Club. Download the Arena Club app today by searching Arena Club in the App Store on your phone, and then use promo code SCI for 10% off your first purchase of cards at Arena Club. Teapot, welcome back to the show.
This is going to be a fun conversation because I feel like we've talked about a lot of things that you and I are very confident in. Mm-hmm. This, as you said just there in the intro, far less certain. We can talk about the dynamics, but when it comes to actually who's going to come up, well, that's the game within the game.
Oh, sure.
We like to play the game.
And we're wrong all the time.
We're wrong all the time.
And sometimes we're right
sometimes
in a big way,
right?
Yep. It happens, and there's nobody out there, much like picking what sports team is going to win the Super Bowl
sports
this year,
betting.
Or sports betting, daily fantasy sports. Nobody's perfect at it. But there are some patterns. There are some things you can look for. There are some directions you can go that will give you a better chance of success.
Yep.
And that's what we want to give the audience today. And I think it's important to start with this. I remember back to a few years ago. I think both you and I had some conversations about this. I think we might have both done videos about this topic. As you go back year over year over year over year, and you go back in time, there are less and less and less and less and less players' cards every single year that are still valuable today.
Yep.
It's actually an amazing pattern.
Yep.
I remember doing a video on this, I think it was in 2021 or 2022, and I said, like, cards of last year's rookie class, there were like 12, and I think I was looking at basketball. I was like, there were 12 rookies from last year's rookie class whose Prism Silvers were over $100.
Yeah.
But then you go back to the year before and it was like 10. And then you go back to the year before that and it was like 8. And you went back to the year before that and it was 7. You went back to the year before that and it was 6. You went back to the year before that and it was 4. Until you got all the way back to 2013 and it was
Giannis.
1. It was Giannis.
That's it.
That was it.
That's it.
And today, if you did that same exact exercise, a lot of the players that were actually holding value in some of those years, like maybe a Trae Young in 2018 or even a Zion Williamson at this point in 2019, those players would probably no longer even qualify maybe at the threshold that we were looking at. So it would be even less.
Yep.
And this is a common thing that happens across all sports, across all types of cards. This is a common thing that occurs.
Yep, it is. And we've done those exercises. I did that exact video with those same metrics. Another thing that I did was I looked at like upside versus downside, and I made real comparisons of young rookies or second year players and said, if you were projecting out their career 10 years from now, what's the best case scenario? Who do they end up, who do they play like? you know, what does their career trajectory look like? A lot of variables, championships, other things. What's the maximum upside and what's the worst case scenario downside? And I went through many players like that. I looked at, you know, even top tier players all the way down to somebody like Klay Thompson, who I was like, when it's all said and done, Klay Thompson is probably this generation's Chris Mullin. And I think that's playing out to be true, except for the fact that he was part of a dynasty that won multiple championships. But even the same team, everything sort of played true. And he wasn't the focal point. It was Steph. It was KD. Even Draymond's got like kind of the same cult following almost. And so while there was a ton of hype into his prices at that time when I made that video because the Warriors were winning, now look, he's on the Mavericks. People are already kind of forgetting about him. His card prices have come way down. And that happens with a lot of different players. So I think having that picture and forecasting, if you're into it for the long term, saying, who could this guy really turn out to be? And if the answer isn't Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Steph Curry or one of those Kobe Bryant, probably not the best idea to hold their cards long term.
Yeah. And I mean, Chris Mullin, you just said Chris Mullin. Well, Chris Mullin was on the Dream Team.
He was fantastic.
Chris Mullin was actually a really good player.
He was.
And Chris Mullin's cards are worth very little today.
Exactly.
You know, outside of like 1986 Fleer PSA 10, that's basically the only card of Chris Mullin's that has a ton of value. Speaking of Dream Team, like even to put that in perspective, because there's people watching, I guarantee, and they're like, oh, it's, you know, you want to know what card's going to go up in value? Just don't buy, you know, this year's rookies, or don't speculate. Buy the greats, buy the goats. Well, I'll tell you what, let's look at the Dream Team, the greatest basketball team ever assembled. Everybody on that team just about is in the Hall of Fame. Maybe all of them are on the Hall. Well, I guess Christian Laettner wouldn't be, but I think maybe everybody else on that team was in the Hall of Fame. And you're talking about a incredible, incredible group, the best basketball players of that era in, you know, the early 1990s era. And let's think about that. You've got Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. Clearly, they are valuable, and their card, they have a bunch of cards that are valuable and deservedly so. Then you kind of take a step down, right? And you've got guys like Charles Barkley and Hakeem Olajuwon. Those players, they have a few cards that are really valuable. Maybe just their rookie, like maybe just their 86 Fleers and PSA 10. Even when you get into like the late 90s inserts with some of those types of guys, which for Jordan, all of these late 90s inserts are, in, you know, a lot of the rare late 90s inserts are incredibly valuable. Yep. But there are late 90s inserts of some of these other players too, like a Charles Barkley. Not nearly as valuable or sought after. And his career was winding down then, but so was Jordan's career was winding down, you know, down then as well, right? And then, you know, you've got other guys on that team like Clyde Drexler, who Chris Mullin, like players like that who really don't get much love or attention or have much value at all in the hobby across all of their cards. And probably aren't gonna ever see, like, you know, they're probably not gonna get real hot again. And maybe a little bit of an exception with the Dream Team, because I could actually see around the like the 50th anniversary of the Dream Team or the 100th year anniversary of the NBA, I could actually see all of the Dream Team players starting to get a little attention and hype again. But for the most part, guys of that tier, they're still Hall of Famers. You know, Clyde Drexler is in the Hall of Fame. He's an incredible player. But there's not many Clyde Drexler cards being chased or transacted today. And Clyde Drexler, his cards at a card show aren't drawing much love. People aren't going up and really wanting to buy him or chase him. They're not that valuable. And yet he was a Hall of Famer, part of the Dream Team, one of the great talents. So you apply that to today's terms, and you got to think that, like, out of an entire decade of any, for any sport, out of an entire decade, if you go 20 or 30 years into the future, you're only going to have one or two players from an entire decade that whose cards are still going to be sought after, chased, and hyped 20, 30 years later. Only one or two from an entire decade. And so you think to, you think about the number of basketball players, baseball players, football players today. I mean, in football, for example, you know, people are still hyped and chasing cards of Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Trevor Lawrence has died off a little bit, but you know, but there was still a lot of hype around him. Jordan Love's getting increasing hype this year. CJ Stroud's got a lot of hype. Jaden Daniels is newest on the scene with a ton of hype. I didn't yet mention Patrick Mahomes. I didn't mention Jared Goff. I didn't mention Brock Purdy, you know, who there are a lot of people still chasing. Justin Herbert, I haven't mentioned yet. Jalen Hurts, I haven't mentioned. Tua, now he's kind of fallen off with the injuries, but there was a moment where
he's back and playing again.
But he's back and playing again. Think of all the people I just mentioned. I didn't even say Caleb Williams. I didn't even say a lot of guys who there are probably people listening who are buying. Out of all those guys I just mentioned, there's only a couple that people are still going to be collecting or buying or chasing after, you know, 20 years from now. Patrick Mahomes is going to be one. Who's the other?
Mahomes is the only one right now, the only one who I would say for sure will have value long term. And what that value looks like relative to today and where his prices are today and what that trajectory looks like is very much up in the air. We've seen it with like Peyton Manning where, you know, his card prices were hotter even in a slower time in the 20, you know, when he was still playing in the 2010s. And then they came down and they sort of cool off. And then you get your Hall of Fame announcement and they tick back up. And then, and really only then, they sort of settle back in. It's almost like that Hall of Fame bid gets people confident in their staying power long term, in spite of the fact that you know Peyton Manning is one of the five best, you know, quarterbacks of all time. So that sort of locks him in. Since Brady has retired, his card prices are down like 50% from where they were when he was at his height winning the Super Bowl with the Buccaneers. And way less than that if you talk about the COVID, you know, crazy prices. Football, all these different sports have a lot of unique factors. I think we were talking about basketball. And basketball, in none of these sports is it good enough to be good. It's not even good enough to be great. You have to be transcendent. And if I look at a sport like basketball, you go back all the way through time. Wilt and Bill Russell, Kareem and Dr. J, Bird and Magic, Jordan and Kobe, LeBron and Steph. Those are the players that I would say will withstand the test of time forever, really. They are the two best players from each respective generation. Had some overlap with each other in different times. But once you start going down to those lower tiers, I recently did a video showing two basically opposite pyramids. And the idea was at the top, you have those top tier players, 1 to 2 at the most. And then you start to move down the list and the value just decreases by orders of magnitude. Jordan's prices are so much more than any other player. And then you kind of come down to LeBron, and then you kind of come down to Kobe and then to Steph, and they sort of trickle down. If you flip it, you can get very expensive cards for the most iconic sets of all time. So if you start talking about precious metal gems, any scrub might be more expensive than LeBron's cheapest rookie. Do you know what I mean? There's sort of that inverted relationship. But it really does start to decrease. You mentioned, you know, Drexler and Barkley. You've got guys like Karl Malone and John Stockton. You've got Kevin Garnett. You've got a lot of players who were really, really, I mean, Hall of Famers, like you said, but their prices don't compare at all. And when you start to look at it long term, those are the ones in that one tier down from the top tier that I actually kind of worry about the most long term. Because I think as you move away from people having direct attachment and nostalgia and memory to them playing and into an era where it's really only the legend of what they were, where somebody goes, I wasn't alive to watch them play. Like for me with Bird and Magic, I never really saw them play. It doesn't have the same effect. And it decreases my desire and my demand for those cards, to even have them. So that's a really interesting dynamic within basketball, but within all the sports. Football is like, at any given time, the 15 youngest, most potential quarterbacks are always worth insane money, like at any given time. They might not be the top 15 quarterbacks in the NFL. There might be some veterans, but at any given time, every quarterback taken within the first three rounds now of the NFL draft ends up coming out with like crazy prices. And then we start to see that tick down and tick down and tick down, and you see these things like what we saw with Mac Jones and Daniel Jones and, you know, all these other quarterbacks who didn't sort of pan out. And it's really something you have to be worried about in football. Lamar Jackson right now is poised to win his third MVP. And he's having an incredibly dominant, statistically dominant year. But then the Ravens keep losing goofy games and he can't win a playoff game. We talked about this in the office last time. I was like, what if Lamar Jackson wins 4 or 5 MVPs? and never even makes it to the, you know, AFC Championship game or to the Super Bowl, right?
Is Dan Marino. Yeah. Dan Marino didn't win that many MVPs.
Dan Marino didn't win that many MVPs.
But many people consider Dan Marino to be the greatest pure passer of all time.
Well, so now there's this goofy dynamic with Lamar, too, where he's actually having one of the best passing seasons of any quarterback in the NFL. Plus, he's still mobile and still runs, not quite as much as he used to. But he's throwing the ball really well with incredible efficiency and not turning the ball over. But there's also sort of that stigma of like, well, he was just a running quarterback, like Mike Vick, ignore the dog stuff and just say, there's sort of like this idea that like, was he really a good quarterback who could win championships? Contrast that with somebody like Joe Burrow, who's pretty much a pure pocket passer, who's, you know, in the minds of people and how quarterbacks should be, right or wrong, would think about that as opposed to a Lamar or Jalen Hurts or somebody else like that, you know, who they run all over the field. So I don't know, football's really tricky.
Because, you know, I said Dan Marino, right? And Dan Marino's cards, his outside, and he was in a different era. He was in the junk wax era. So it's hard to have valuable Dan Marino cards in general because of the era. But, like, you know, outside of his rookie card in a PSA 10 grade, there's not a ton of value there. He's got some inserts and stuff along the way when you get in the 90s that have a little bit of value and maybe some flawless stuff recently of patches and autos. But, like, it's hard, right? And it's like, and when you think of the dominant, who's the quarterback of the decade from the 80s, it was Joe Montana. It was, you know, Joe Montana, not Dan Marino, because Dan Marino didn't win the
rings.
Because
of championships.
John Elway, you know, beat out Dan Marino in the long term, too, because of the championships, right? So that thing you said about the basketball players and thinking about them generationally and then realizing how few there are historically that are still really, really super relevant in the sports card hobby today from their cards driving the maximum attention. Like if one of their cards goes to auction, like people are like, oh yeah, I want a Bill Russell card or I want a Will Chamberlain card or I want a Kobe Bryant card. But they don't say that, you know, as much about a lot of the other guys we've talked about during this show. So we've now scared our audience a lot, right? But so let's translate this to the people who do want, though, to buy the up-and-comer, which, by the way, we both do. Like we recognize the long-term danger of speculating because you really got to have the next great thing. Yet at the same time, I've turned around and I've bought, you know, I've spent $100,000 plus on Victor Wembanyama cards in the last year, right? Super dangerous. Now, I would argue on the Victor Wembanyama front, the reason why I'm doing it is because he has the upside potential, in my opinion, to reach, to be that generational player, to be that LeBron or that Steph or that Kobe of this decade. He's well positioned to do it, in my opinion. But then again, a lot of people, including myself, felt Zion had that same exact opportunity when he came into the league back in 2019, that he was that generational player. Scouts were saying he's the greatest prospect since LeBron. They were saying that about Zion. Now they're saying that about Wemby. But they were saying that about Zion back in 2019. And that obviously hasn't materialized, and people have lost a ton of money on Zion Williamson cards, right? So there's that story. Even a player like Luka, who still is a darling of the hobby. Still, although his prices have come down a lot, his prices are still high. Zion's prices have crashed. Luka's prices have softened, but they still have height to them because people still think Luka is that guy. He is that generational guy.
He's still at the top of the current list.
And maybe he will be. But maybe he won't be, because if he doesn't, you know, he's close to winning an MVP every year, hasn't won one yet.
Close to winning a championship. He got close to the finals last year.
He got in the finals. He got close to a championship last year. That was the closest he had ever gotten, but hasn't won one. And so if you go another 3, 4, 5, 8 years, he doesn't have a championship. Maybe he doesn't have an MVP, or maybe he's got one MVP along the way. You know, where does that kind of leave him? And then you've also got, by the way, guys like Jokic who have actually done generational things, won championships, won MVP awards, you know, done generational things, yet, and Giannis, you could put into this category as well, right? But even their prices of their cards are not, like, they're not looked at in that same way, right? So how do you identify? How do you know? How do you buy the guy today who's actually going to be more valuable in a year or two or five?
Yeah. So I want to talk about that current landscape of players. And then I did a video, I don't know, 3-4 months ago about trying to predict the next, I think the title was Trying to Predict the Next Anthony Edwards. That was when his cards blew up. So it would have been probably, I guess, maybe 5 months ago now, right, during the finals or during the playoffs when they were making their run. But I outlined a list of different things. And you could almost turn this into like a scorecard and rate guys and average it out to determine their player profile. I really think you could, you know, just for your own personal use. Age matters a lot. You want players to be young, really, like young. That comes into play a lot more in a sport like baseball, where counting stats matter a ton to that tribe, to that group of people who like that. Counting stats, really milestones, and you want to hit, you know, 500 home runs or 3,000 strikeouts or. All of those things really matter in baseball. So the younger, the better. If you get a prospect who's coming up and they're like 24 or 25 when they make their MLB debut, the Hall of Fame is just going to be really tough for them to accomplish. If you go back to basketball, though, that even helps a ton. Look at LeBron. He started at 18, and now and add that with the longevity, and he's got records now that it's really hard to see being broken. It could be done, but he's still playing right now, so it's like, who knows?
Still playing well, too.
You know, Kobe did the same thing, came out, you know, really early. We saw that with, you know, I think Shaq, was he 19 when he came up? So if you're really young and you start building early and building a legacy in stats, and it does seem like the sooner these guys get into the NBA, in many cases, the sooner they can figure out the speed and the pace of the NBA and the style, so that by the time they are 21 or 22 years old, Anthony Edwards is another one who's incredibly young playing in the NBA. So you sort of look at them and you're like, Jason Tatum's
super 20, young for 26 being in his draft
now or something.
Right, for being in his draft class.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 2017 draft class, how many years he's been in the league, but he came in really young.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was NBA. Like 19 when he came in too. So
I think he was younger than that.
He might have still been 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're all really young, and that helps. So age is important. Draft pedigree is incredibly important. And I want to unpack that a little bit more, but where you're picked does matter. Having hype early and belief that you are a transcendent player really, really matters. And outside of Tom Brady, you let me know if you can think of anybody. Outside of Tom Brady, I can't think of a single all-time great, generationally great player in the minds in that top tier who wasn't a top draft pick, who wasn't believed in early from day one. Team dynamics really matter. Are you the number one or number two option, whether it's basketball, or are you in the right position on your, you know, football team, or are you in the right position even on a baseball team? Those things matter. Personality, persona matters. You got to have something that differentiates you and makes you stand out. Charisma, swagger, you know, trash talking, some kind of intrigue. Stats do matter. They're obviously, you go right to stats and talk about performance, though maybe not quite as much as people would think.
More in baseball, I would say.
More in baseball, because baseball is the sport where you have the least control of what your team can do and the most control over what you can do. It's just, you just go out and it's one versus one against the pitcher or vice versa in baseball. Very, very difficult. We saw Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout on the same team and they couldn't do jack diddly together. So
yeah, and I would say headline stats matter. Not every stat matters.
That's right.
The same.
Not
home
all
runs
stats
matter
equal.
In baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
More stats matter in baseball, but if you're hitting a lot of home runs, if you're making in basketball, high scoring, three-point shot. Nobody cares. No sports card investor, collector seems to care about defensive efficiency.
Nobody cares about Mookie Blaylock
because he led
the league in steals for five seasons.
Correct. Right. No. Like, no one cares about efficiency, defense. Right. Like, it doesn't seem to occur.
They don't even care about field goal percentage.
Right.
Like, you could go out, and as long as you're scoring 29 a game, even if you're shooting 39.8% from the field, nobody cares.
Yeah.
People just see that. No, man, look at this
29
guy.
29 points.
This guy's a certified bucket. And it's like, well, no, he's breaking shots and turning it over six times a game.
Right.
But people think that's exciting. So play style and athleticism matter a ton, too. I think it ties into that. Big highlight reel plays, stuff that gets people talking about you. And then the last thing, this is especially, especially true in football and in basketball, is winning. You have to win. Less important in baseball. All-time greats, many of them never won anything. But in basketball and football, it's incredibly important. So look at the current landscape of players. One thing that we're seeing now that we have never seen, I don't think, in the history of the NBA is an incredibly high amount of league parity. Like, you're talking about 8 seeds yep. upsetting 1 seeds and contending, and any team beating any other team on any given night, save maybe one or two really, really bad examples. Like, that's how the NBA is now. That's how sports are trending in general. A lot of parity across the board. It can be exciting. There's intrigue. It's a little bit more like going to the playoffs now, like March Madness, like who's going to upset whom. But it's also almost like bad for the league. They've got like too many superstars, too many players that they're trying to sell, and they can't even figure out who the best one is. And Nikola Jokic is the best player in the NBA. You know I'm a Giannis guy, but Jokic is by far and away the best player in the NBA right now. I don't think people realize how transcendentally good he is in terms of his efficiency. There's never been a player like him, but he looks like a goon. He's not particularly exciting for the everyday fan. I like watching him because I think he's actually really interesting to watch play, but a lot of people don't like watching him. And so now you've got sort of like what I call the Tim Duncan effect, where it's like you're transcendentally good, truly, but you're not transcendentally popular. You're not transcendentally exciting.
Yeah.
So are you really going to be the guy that people remember from this generation?
And Tim Duncan's a good example because his cards are not worth very much.
They're not worth very much.
They're not worth very much.
Tim Duncan is for sure a top 10 player of all time and the consensus best power forward of all time. And his cards are not worth anywhere near what you would think just based on that.
Yeah.
Nowhere near that.
Yeah.
Like if you just saw how is it that a player ranks top 10 all time in a league that's been around for, 70 plus years, and his cards just are like peanuts compared yep. to guys who are much lower on the ranking list, by the way. Like you got some Tim Duncan cards selling for less than Dwayne Wade cards and yep. other stuff like that. So all of these things really matter. And I think you have to look at them now. But if you're taking these current sports and you're trying to figure that out, if you take the NBA, it's like Giannis is really popular. He's got a good personality. He's got a good story. I think that's definitely helping his card value. He's won a few MVPs thanks to Kevin Durant's big toe. He won an NBA championship and, went out with a 50-piece, to clinch it. A lot of stuff to cling to and a lot of moments to remember with Giannis. I still think he's got to do more.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that Nikola Jokic exists is actually hurting Giannis's ability to truly potentially be the guy or one of the top two guys of this generation. And then when I look across the board, it's like anybody's guess. People are like, oh, Anthony Edwards. But it's like, yeah. Like the personality's there. Go through the box of things. The age is there. The draft pedigree's there. The team dynamics are there. The persona is definitely there in the big time. He's like number one in terms of that. I think that drives his prices. His play style and athleticism. Statistically, he's unique because he's not one of these guys filling up the stat sheet. He go out and score 26, 6, and 5. It's like an old school, Kobe stat line before it was just Kobe and he started scoring 34 a game. In today's league where 32 or 33 a game is like the norm, you're not looking at Anthony Edwards and seeing him even in the top 15 of like overall stat lines and going, wow, this guy's really impressive. He's gritty. He's competitive. A lot of us old school NBA fans like the way he plays. He's got to win. He's got to win
yeah.
in order to be the guy, to have like a guy do that. So I don't know if that's going to happen, especially with Minnesota.
And you mentioned the parity in the NBA now. The problem with that is typically for somebody to really become generationally sought after in terms of their cards, they not only have to win, but they got to win multiple times.
That's what I mean. And we're used to that. Dynasties
right,
we're used to in the NBA.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
And so even if Minnesota does have the breakthrough year and captures a ring, they may never get back.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit like, well, like a lot of the teams we've
yeah.
seen recently,
might be like the Bucks,
like Denver.
That's right.
Like a lot of these teams that, they got a ring, they got hot for a little while, but now all of a sudden they're not quite at that upper echelon, yeah. it seems anymore. Maybe Denver will get back there. The Bucks seem very far away from yeah. that. We'll see. We'll see, right? But like, it's the Golden State dynasty, Steph's got enough rings that, yeah. For a ton of reasons, Steph yeah. is in that category of being great forever.
Yeah.
But you're right. A lot of the guys from the last five championships, like no one has, even the Boston guys, like Boston should be really good this year.
I was just going to bring up Boston.
But what if they don't win the next few years?
I was just going to bring up Boston though, because I think they're the most interesting example right now because they have been incredibly good since Jason Tatum was drafted by that team. The best pick in that draft. And they keep winning and they keep winning and they made it several times and they've gone deep in playoff runs and he's already broken records for most playoff games won and most points scored by his age and all this stuff. So he's sort of like he should be the poster child for winning up until this point in his career, but people don't really, like, there's not a lot of enthusiasm. I think it's partially because people are sick of Boston winning everything. Like, they just always seem to be competitive and win. They go in these cycles and they win more, and they win more since forever. So people are a little like, yeah, they're kind of like the bad guy now. It's like the Lakers and Celtics, unless you're a fan of those teams, nobody wants to see them win. And then Tatum's, he just lacks some of that, you know, sex appeal, excitement type right. thing of attracting people to say, I love this guy's game.
Right.
It's just pull up threes that are unblockable because of his crazy wingspan. And I don't know, there's not, it's just not a lot. Like, people don't get really excited about his play style.
I think that will change if he wins another couple of championships. I think people, I think he'll, people's perception of him will begin
to change. But Jaylen Brown won finals MVP.
Yeah.
So it's not like he did what Giannis did and put the team on his back and went out with a bang to clinch a championship. Yeah. You've got Jaylen Brown, who's kind of like Batman and Robin a little bit, you know?
So stepping back, we're talking a lot about NBA, but a lot of the points that we're trying to make here apply to all the sports, right? Yeah. And the basic point we're trying to make is it's real damn hard to figure out who the players are today that are going to be those generational athletes. But it's also really clear, looking at all the data, that 20 years from now, there's only going to be one or two players from this decade that are going to really still be sought after. So you got to figure it out if you're going to hold on to those cards long, long term. Now, if you're speculating short term, that's a totally different story. I believe that if you're looking to short term speculate, you're probably better off not trying to buy a lot of the names of the top players that we talked about, but rather trying to find some of the sneakier guys on down the list. It's a totally different strategy. You're not, if you're speculating and you're wanting to make a 3-month flip or 6-month flip or 60-day flip or whatever, you're not trying to, you don't want to buy the best because the best already has all the hype built in.
Yep.
All those guys who we just mentioned, they've already got the hype. Their prices are already elevated. You're actually looking for the opposite of what you would look for when you're looking for the guy to hold for 10 years. Yeah. The guy you want to speculate on is the guy who's further down the draft board, further down, you know, the list of good players in everybody's mind. The guy whose stats are not eye-popping previously, but maybe you think he's going to be eye-popping this next year. Maybe you think he's going to rise this next year. This is his breakout year. This is the moment where he starts to gain attention. And oftentimes, if you buy a guy who's cheap enough, it only takes a game or two, and all of a sudden his stuff doubles overnight. Happened with Dalton Kennect. It happened with, you know, earlier this year.
I thought you were going to say someone else, but
One that comes to mind, right?
Well, you just had Bilal Coulibaly on the top five.
Bilal Coulibaly is another great example, right? So he was drafted, I think, what, seventh maybe last year in the NBA draft. Everyone was focused on Wembanyama, Brandon Miller. No one was focused on the second guy from France, Coulibaly. Yeah. But he has been playing well for the Wizards this season. Yeah. He had a couple of big games, and all of a sudden, his price is literally double over the course of a week or two. Because whereas Wemby, who scored 50 points, who has had great moments this season, and some maybe not so great moments, but he's had some great moments this season. His cards have not moved up, or not moved up significantly, certainly not doubled, because there was so much hype and such a big amount already invested in him.
Yeah.
He's got to become generational for his cards to really become something. Whereas a guy who's completely under the radar only has to have a few good games. It happened last season with Cam Thomas.
Cam Thomas.
Remember Cam Thomas of the Nets?
I was sitting here thinking Cam Thomas.
Literally, he had like what a streak of what, 3 or 4 50-point games or something, or 40-point games or something in a row. And all of a sudden, like his stuff went like quadrupled, quintupled and over the course of like a couple of weeks. Those, if you're gonna speculate and you're looking to flip, focus on those types of guys, in my opinion. Yeah. Don't focus on you know, your player who's already got everything baked in. Yeah. Buy those guys if you believe that they're going to be generational. Buy Anthony Edwards if you believe he's going to win 2 of the 3 next championships and he's going to be a 3-time MVP by the time he retires. Anything short of that, don't buy Anthony Edwards right now.
I would say you look for the hype into the top tier players in the offseason and buy them when they're going to be at their lowest point, typically 4 to 8 weeks mm-hmm. after they are bounced from the playoffs and when there's other big sports stuff going on, that's typically the lowest point.
Which means right now by baseball. At this very moment in time.
Yeah.
November and early December.
Late November into the second week of December is the best time.
That's your window to buy baseball.
It absolutely is. It doesn't mean every player is going to come down and be at a serious discount. We talked about how I don't necessarily think Shohei Ohtani is going to come down and be a big discount. There is one other scenario in season that can really work to your advantage. And you and I discussed this recently. Injuries. Paolo Banchero is out. He's mm-hmm. injured. Chet Holmgren just got injured.
Yep.
Both of those guys, you watch their prices, and if they come down and they're anticipated to come back and still have hype behind them, I think those two guys are on different trajectories, with Banchero being the clear number one on his team and potentially a top 10 player in the NBA. Chet is in a little more unique situation just with having Shea on that team, but he still has the potential to be a really dominant two-way player and, you know, a very strong number two on that team.
And possibly the better path to a championship.
And that's right.
Which does help Chet.
A better path to winning. Thank you. That's what I was going to say. And so but you look at those types of things, and when there are prolonged injuries where people are sort of forgetting about them, that can be a really good opportunity to pick those players up. And then in the case of Banchero, maybe he comes back and starts scoring 34 a game or whatever, having really strong stat lines like he was before he got hurt. And maybe Chet comes back just in time for a playoff run, much like we saw with Kristaps Porzingis last year with Boston, where his cards went crazy for like a week because he came back and had a couple good games before he got hurt again.
That was like a great first game in the NBA Finals. First two games in the NBA Finals, and his cards doubled, and then he didn't play the rest of the finals. And, you know, but these are all very good points. I think that's how you have to approach it. Those are good thoughts. The injury things. And by the way, I think those are two excellent guys to buy. When we're back to talk basketball again, but I think Paolo Banchero and Chet Holmgren, if you see an injury dip, if you see cards go down, because both of their early seasons were trending in a really good direction. Both of their teams are trending in a really good direction. They're now both out. They'll be back. I actually think both of those guys have opportunity.
You know, the first thing to go down to the most, I've noticed this recently, so much so that I'm like, I got to dig into this a little bit more. Whether a player just got injured or they're just generally trending down, go try to buy BGS 9.5s and SGC 10s, because they come down so much harder and faster than PSA 10s do. Victor Wembanyama's Prism Silver BGS 9.5, like 45 days ago, was up in the 700s. It was actually like $120 less than a PSA 10. The last two sales have been like 380. That card has come crashing down. The PSA 10s are down like, I don't know, 14% or something since the season started. The BGS 9.5s and the SGC 10s are way down. And I've seen that now on several different players. So if that's something you're looking at too, whether you just want to buy the card and hold it to watch it kind of equalize and go back up, which it should, or get it at a massive discount and buy it to crack and cross it over, or try to get it to a PSA 10. Right now, you crack and cross that BGS 9.5, you don't have a lot to lose even if it gets a PSA 9. You know what I mean? So there's sometimes that type of stuff is something to watch too.
I want to say one thing real quick about the actual, that's a great point. And I want to say one thing real quick about the type of card. We did an episode a month or so ago about sets.
Yep.
What sets are the best sets to invest in.
Yeah.
So we're not going to go into all the different sets, but I will say in general, if you are buying to speculate, you're buying a different type of card than if you are buying to invest and hold long-term.
100%.
Two totally different types of cards. If you're buying to speculate, I would buy highly liquid, highly transacted cards, cards that are bought and sold every single day. I would stick to your absolute top sets, your most transacted sets, not your most valuable sets, but your most transacted sets. Prism and Optic. Mainly just Prism and Optic, in my opinion, for basketball and football. You could maybe argue maybe a little bit of Select or Mosaic, but even those sets get complex with all the different levels and whatever. Prism and Optic, in my opinion. And for baseball, you know, Topps Chrome, Bowman Chrome, like real basic stuff. Don't be afraid to buy base cards.
Yeah.
PSA 10 base cards.
Yeah.
If you're speculating,
right.
Don't hold a PSA 10 base card long term. It's a base card. You know what? It's not going to be an exciting thing to have in 20 years. But But a PSA 10 base card, those often the base cards move first.
Yes.
A player has a big night, the base cards jump in value
20%. Yeah.
Then the silver cards maybe follow, or the refractors maybe follow, and then all the numbered stuff maybe follows after that, because that stuff doesn't sell as much. So there's not as many transactions to allow it to jump as quickly.
They're readily available.
Yes.
It's a lower point of entry, so you can afford, more people can afford to speculate on it. And there's price confidence baked in because there's transactions happening every day and not just one or two, like dozens of transactions on those. So it is the, you know, the sports card speculators day trading vehicle to use those base PSA 10s.
And it's easy. And if you wanted to go load up on Paolo Banchero, you know, cards right now at this moment, or some baseball player right now during the offseason, you can go find their Topps Chrome base or their Prism base and a PSA 10 and readily buy those, or get the standard refractor, get the silver or the refractor PSA 10 and just, you know, buy a handful of them. Yeah. You can get them quickly. If you're planning on flipping them 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, flip out of it, it's an easy one to do.
I made a mistake a few years ago. And I had a hunch that Desmond Bane was going to break out a little bit and was going to have a good season and that his prices would go up. And I was actually right. His card prices went up overall. His Prism Base and Prism Silvers and that stuff went up overall. I bought a card that was too rare. I bought like a lime green to 149 optic. So it was an optic card, but it just wasn't a card that sells as frequently. And when I put it on eBay on a buy it now, trying to get it at the same margin, you know, bump for what I had paid for it for these other cards, it just sat there.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody's looking for that card in the speculation game, and nobody's, it's not something that, the lime greens tend to be pretty popular, like people like the way they look, but it just, I don't think it got enough eyeballs, and there was no price confidence because nobody else was helping set a comp the day before, or even the week before, or even the month before. From what I bought the card in person, you know, at the National. So it was like, You gotta buy the stuff that just moves.
It is difficult. You go to a card show with a card that's kind of a rare card. I had a guy walk up to me today inside Cards HQ, and he said, "Hey, I brought a bunch of cards. I sold several of them to your store, but here's six cards that I brought that I thought your store would have wanted to buy, but they didn't even make me an offer on them." Yeah. And I looked at them, and he goes, "They're really nice cards." And I looked at him, and I said, "Yeah, I understand why.
Yeah,
because they're all." Rare, one of a kind. Yeah. One of them was a one of one.
Yeah.
One of them was a out of 10 from 2005.
Yeah.
One of them was a out of 25 from like 2010 with a piece of a shoe cleat inside of it. And I looked at these cards and I'm like, the problem is some of these cards probably haven't transacted for months.
Right.
Some of them may not have transacted for years.
Yeah.
If one of them was sold this year, it probably just one was sold. So our buyers who are trying to ensure that we can make margin on a card, they don't have enough price confidence because they don't see enough sales history. So they're like, I don't even know what to offer. This scares me. I'm not gonna make an offer on it because they don't want to be wrong and then have our store take a bath on the card, you know, because we can't turn around and sell it for, you know, above what they bought it at, right? So I'm sure anyone listening who has kind of a rare card and has gone to a card show to shop it around, has probably had that issue. Yeah. So if you're buying to speculate, buy the super liquid stuff. If you're buying to hold long term, then the game changes a little bit.
Yep.
Game used jersey patches. Autograph cards, buy really nice cards in as good of a condition as you can buy them. But like buy more rare, buy numbered, buy nice, buy attractive, buy game used jersey, buy autos, like buy stuff that like, that's a really nice card.
Yeah.
You know, and because that's the stuff that like, you know, if I'm going to hold a card for 10 or 20 years, I like it to be something nice. Yeah. I like it to be, and it's not, you know, obviously different eras. Those cards didn't always exist. If you're trying to buy 80s cards or before, that's not even an option.
It's just a game of probabilities and distribution of how people collect and speculate in all of those things. And in order to sell those really obscure cards, you have to do one of two things. You either have to find a super collector of that player or that team who already has all the other stuff, and now they're down to the level of going after the more niche, more obscure stuff. Or you have to find somebody whose collecting style is just against the grain and more more eclectic and more niche, mm-hmm. where they don't like to have the mainstream stuff. They're not interested in the stuff that was mass produced or that everybody else has. They want a truly one of one unique collection. Yeah. Those people exist. They're hard to find. Your best bet in most cases is to put a card like that with a fixed price of what you'd like to try to get out of it on eBay and get eyeballs on it and be open to offers and negotiation. Or if you have an Instagram presence, to go out and search on Instagram and look for super collector accounts of that particular player. And then in many cases, somebody will be like, you will be ecstatic if you come to them and you say, hey, I have this really cool one of your favorite player. Are you interested? And figure out how to work out a deal. But it's just not as easy. And when you're running a card shop, you guys, while you're interested in having your shelves stocked, you're not interested in having your shelves stale with cards sitting for months and months and months, and nobody and everybody coming in and seeing the same cards and going, yeah, I still don't want that random one of one from 2010.
Yeah.
I don't want
that. So as a result of that, we need to buy cards that are liquid and easier to move, that are, more people are going to be interested in. Not rare one of a kind pieces that it's more difficult to find the specific buyer out there.
It's the same approach we take in how we prioritize which cards we start building out pricing for in our products and market movers and other things. It's like we're trying to serve the biggest audience and the cards that move the most so that the most people can benefit from it.
Okay. This has been a good episode. We could talk about this for another 6 hours, but I'm going to cut us off here. In part because we got to get on our way. We got to let our audience get on its way as well. But in part because we'll save some of the rest of it back and we'll do some more episodes like this over the next few months. This has been a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Thanks for coming on, Teapot.
Well, next time we'll talk about maybe some actual people and what we think and why.
I like it. I'm sure the audience would like it as well. In fact, audience, let us know in the comments what you would like to hear about next episode, and we'll try to incorporate some of that into our future plans. And in the meantime, please make sure you're subscribed to this show on the Jeff Wilson Show channel on YouTube, but also make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so that you can listen to the show wherever you are. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon with our next episode. Take care.